on the Progressive Radio Network. And I'll be with you for the next hour, talking to you about what's going on in and around the New York area. I have a wonderful guest today, Joe Malura from the Brooklyn Brewery. He'll be on talking about craft beers in a little while. And, of course, I have a recipe to share with you, so stay around. And if you have any questions, you can call into the studio at 888-874-4888. So, this week is, we have the holidays, as you all know, coming up. But on Monday, I start cooking for a group of needy people that I've been cooking for the past 19 years. I thought it was 20, but I was corrected. We do a big Christmas feast in Rufus King Park. It's always the Tuesday before Christmas, and this year it happens to fall on Christmas Eve Day. So we're expecting record numbers of people. For Thanksgiving, there were over 600 people, and it took like 4 hours for people to get through the line. It was ridiculous. But we're anticipating the same or more for our Christmas feast, and we have Santa coming with gifts for all the children. And we have a big coat collection, so there's coats for people. So if anyone knows anyone who is in need, Rufus King Park at 10 o'clock on Tuesday is the place to be. If you want to volunteer, you can go to my website at iagreen.com and sign up for a cooking shift. We'll be cooking all day Monday and Tuesday morning, and then schlepping everything to the park and serving on Tuesday. Everybody wants to be there for serving. Very few people want to be around for the cleanup afterwards. And we're really asking people, if you come to help serve, that you also make yourself available for the cleanup. On January 8th, it's a big rally in Albany to stand along with other New Yorkers, letting Governor Cuomo know that we do not want fracking in our state. New York State is a holdout. The biofuel companies really want to get into New York badly. They've already bought up people's land, and they're waiting for Cuomo's okay. But we have a moratorium on fracking as of now, and we want to keep it that way. So please, if you can sign up and join us on the bus, there's buses coming from around the state. If you go to Food and Water Watch, they have a list of all the different buses, and there's one or two buses coming from Long Island, my area. I have already signed up, and I will be going. And if you're on the Long Island bus, there will be good food, because I will make some food for everybody. So please sign up and show your support for the anti-GMO, I'm sorry, the anti-fracking movement. We're also anti-GMO, but this one is fracking. So join us for that. January 10th through 12th, there's a conference going on in New York called the Real Truth About Health Conference. And it's at the Millennium Hotel in New York on January 10th through the 12th. I know Jeffrey Smith will be there, as well as a whole another slew of professionals in the field of health and well-being. So if you are in New York or interested about this, you can also live stream it on the computer. So you can look up the Real Truth About Health Conference and find out more about that. Brian Clement will also be there, so that should be a good event. January 24th through the 26th is NOFA New York's annual winter conference. This is the 32nd annual organic farming and gardening conference, and it's always held at the Saratoga Hilton in Saratoga Springs. If you register, I think early registration is already closed, but it's a great happening, so if you can make it, I recommend being there. And then also, the Honeybee Lives organization is having some beekeeping classes. They're actually coming down to Brooklyn to teach ones. They also have some up in the Hudson Valley. But on January 25th to the 26th, there's honeybeelives.org. You can check out their website. You can find out about their beekeeping classes at the Commons in Brooklyn on Atlantic Avenue, January 25th and 26th. And during the winter is the time to start thinking about raising bees. If you've had any interest and you're thinking about it, this is a really great time to go and explore that, because if you want to order, if you want to order bees, you need to order them soon in order to get them in the springtime. I know we were late last year in ordering our bees, and so by the time we got ours set up, I think it was June, which is just a little bit late. But nevertheless, we did it, and our two hives are doing really well. And this past weekend, I know my husband put up a little wind protector because they're at the end of our field, and so they get a lot of direct wind, and it was suggested to us to put some barrier up just to prevent the wind from blowing straight through the hive. So we did that. But they're buzzing in there. You know, if you put your hand up against the hive, you can really feel the vibration. What they do all winter long is they all crowd around the queen bee to keep the queen warm, and they just flutter their wings, and they, you know, just vibrate in there. It's really amazing, the life of bees. If you get a chance to see any of the documentaries that people have made on bees, it's really fascinating. So I have a wonderful recipe that I want to share with you, but before I get to that, I wanted to talk about some of the things that are going on in the news this week. I'm sure many of you heard that the FDA is restricting antibiotic use in livestock now. They're trying, you know, they are recognizing that we have a problem, that there's so many antibiotic-resistant bacteria now, and they're relating so much of it to the fact that we have antibiotics, that people are eating antibiotics on a regular basis through the meat that they're eating. So this restriction has so many loopholes. I don't really know if it's really going to make a difference. You know, they're saying that they're restricting the antibiotics, you know, for when they want to use antibiotics just to make the animals grow faster. My understanding is that it's really the hormones that they're giving the animals that are making them grow faster. But it's the CAFO, the confined animal feedlots, where they're in such tight quarters that it makes them sick. So they're actually giving the antibiotics not to make them grow bigger, but to keep them from getting sick. And to give animals antibiotics to keep them from getting sick is still being allowed. So it's really, you know, I don't know how much difference it's really going to make, but my suggestion to everyone, and it has always been, is one, cut down on your meat and poultry intake, and two, when you do eat it, make sure you're sourcing antibiotic-free, hormone-free meat that's raised in a sustainable way. If you can get it local, all the better. Also, it came out in the news that baking with Splenda releases cancer-causing chemicals. Duh! Splenda has never been good. Splenda, just like the GMOs, all the safety testing that's been done on Splenda has been done by the Splenda manufacturers themselves. So this is something that has really come into my awareness over the past few years, and I want to share it with all of you, that most testing that's done on safety of products is being done by the companies making the products. I just don't get that. Our government has no money to spend on with the Food and Drug Administration in testing the safety of products. So they leave it up to the manufacturers to do their own testing and then show the information to the FDA. Well, we all know how skewed that can be. And here they're saying that Splenda is okay if it's not heated. Well, most people put it in their coffee or tea, don't they, when they're using it? So there it goes. It's heated, and then it's cancer-causing. So stay away from that stuff. Europe has a really new model of a win-win situation. They're having social supermarkets, which are kind of like a cross between a co-op and a supermarket. And it's a model that I think our country is going to start looking to, as the cuts in food stamps have really come into play, and so many people are really, really hurting out there. It's so sad, and that is partly why we saw the record numbers of people we saw this year at Thanksgiving, and we anticipated again for Christmas. Things are really hard out there for people who don't have jobs, or actually even people who do have jobs who are being paid minimum wage and trying to raise a family on that. You just can't in the New York area and probably anywhere in the country. So these social supermarkets are something to keep our eyes open for and see what will happen. Also, a British drug company just came out saying that they will no longer pay doctors to promote their drugs. This is GlaxoSmithKline. And, you know, it's just really funny because I've always been saying that, you know, the drug companies are paying off the doctors, and people go, no, 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 no. But here it is. This one company is being recognized as, you know, coming forward, saying that they no longer will give the incentives. And the whole incentive promotion that we have going on with doctors to recommend drugs or recommend testing is just so corrupt. And I think it's really good for everybody to try to stay away as much as you can and become informed. Do your own research. I mean, that's one way that the internet can really be wonderful. Know where your information is coming from. If it's coming from a drug company, don't believe it. Again, the drug companies do their own testing. And they can only test so much. I mean, I was floored when I heard this week that flu vaccination is mandatory for any child in nursery school or daycare centers, that a flu shot is mandatory, and even religious exemption does not fly. How can that be? How can they force parents to give a flu shot to their children? I just can't believe that. And there's no testing on what is the combination of having a flu shot with all the other vaccinations they give. There is no testing. I mean, they test a vaccination solely by itself. They don't do all the testing with how it interacts with everything else that these kids are being given. So, you know, there's a lot of theories as to why there's so many illness and autoimmune diseases. One, of course, is the antibiotic soaps that also has been in the news this week. But, you know, all the antibiotics that we take, whether it's through the meats we eat, the dairy we eat, the soaps we use, our bodies are not being given the opportunities to fight off their own, own healthy bacteria. I mean, the healthiest kids are the kids that live on farms making mud pies and eating the dirt. I mean, come on, folks, let's look at, just step back. You can't just look at, you know, statistics that are being fed to us by the chemical and drug companies and think everything's okay. You need to, you know, become educated on your own, do your research, and come to your own conclusions. But for there to be mandatory vaccinations for flu, which is, you know, so you get the flu. It's not the end of the world. It makes your body stronger in the long run. There's lots of great petitions on my website to sign up for. There's, of course, the anti-fracking rally, and there's a petition to sign up there, and there's also a bus to sign up for. But also a petition to tell Coca-Cola to stop funding all the anti-labeling campaigns. You know, we know that there's so many of these conglomerate manufacturers that have been pouring money into the anti-GMO labeling campaigns, and Coca-Cola is one of them. I think they put $1.7 million into defeating the California labeling last year, and this year $1.5 million into the state of Washington. And it's because of companies like theirs that are, you know, bombarding the voters last minute with these scare tactics that these bills got defeated, because when polls are taken across the country independently, 90% of all Americans want labeling. We're not saying we don't want GMOs, although I am, but that's not what most people are saying. Most people are saying they just want the right to know. They want the right to make a choice. And that's something I'm going to stay with every week, you know, and try to get as many people, all of you listening, to sign the petitions and to do write letters to your congressmen and senators, letting them know that you want GMO labels. That's what they have in Europe. That's what they have across most of the world that allows GMOs. I mean, there's 24 countries that have banned GMOs completely, but over 60 countries require labeling, and the U.S. should certainly be one of them. So, you know, in with that also, as I mentioned earlier with the antibiotics, the FDA is now questioning the safety of antibacterial soaps. You know, this one scientist that was on the panel with me at Hofstra when we debated GMO labeling restrictions, his philosophy, I mean, of course, he thinks GMOs are fine, but he thought that a lot of the autoimmune diseases and the health crisis that we're facing today comes from the rise of antibiotic use, not just in livestock, but also in these soaps. That, like I said, that people just are not being exposed to healthy germs enough or to unhealthy germs and letting your body fight them off naturally. And so we really need to go back to nature a little bit and let our bodies do some of their natural work. Without practice, they're not going to know how to do it when they're really hit badly. So now I'd like to share with you this recipe that I made last week. Oh, it was so good. So I really encourage you to make this recipe. It's stuffed butternut squash. And, you know, I'll probably come up with other fillings as well. This is just what I made last week, but it came out really great, so I want to share it with you. I started with 4 butternut squash that I cut in half lengthwise and removed the seeds that I had 8 halves that I could stuff. For the filling, I had 1 onion chopped, 2 carrots diced, 1 parsnip diced, 6 ounces of mushrooms diced, 1 cup of green beans cut into 1-inch pieces, 1 zucchini diced, 2 cups of broccoli cut into small florets, 1 cup of cooked fava beans. You can use canned or you can use chickpeas if you'd like. 1 tablespoon of minced garlic, 1 tablespoon of minced ginger, olive oil, 1 tablespoon of tamari, 1 teaspoon of mirin. That's Aji Mirin, which is a sweet rice wine, not to be confused with a mirin that Kikkoman sells, even at Whole Foods, that is made mostly from glucose syrup. That's not what you want. And 1/4 cup of toasted slivered almonds. And then I also made a little sauce with 1/4 cup of tahini, 1/4 cup of water, another tablespoon of tamari, a tablespoon of ginger, and a tablespoon of garlic. And I put that in a little mini food processor and just blended that up. You could also use an immersion blender in a measuring cup and blend it up that way too. So I started by, like I said, cutting the butternut squash in half lengthwise. I brushed them with olive oil and I laid them face up in a casserole pan. I poured a little bit of water around the bottom of the squash just to help it steam, and I roasted it in a 400-degree oven for about 20 minutes. And when they were soft, I removed them from the oven. Meanwhile, sauté the onions in olive oil till translucent. Then I added the carrots and the parsnips and cooked them for about another 5 minutes. You always start with the root vegetables, so if you're also going to use burdock, would be really great in this. If you can use burdock, that's even harder than the onions. I would start with the burdock, then add the onions. But you just want to give that time, any root vegetables, give it time to cook first. Then I added the garlic and the ginger, then the broccoli and the green beans, and I cooked it for about 5 more minutes. Then I added the zucchini and the mushrooms because they're a little softer, and I cooked those in. Then I added the fava beans, the tamari, and the mirin just to give it a little bit of liquid in the pan. Then I added the parsley and the tahini sauce. Last, you add the almonds, and then you fill the butternut squash with the vegetable mixture. Bake it about 375 for 20 minutes, and then voila, it's ready to go. I serve the quinoa on the side. You could also do rice pilaf with it. You could do roasted potatoes if you wanted. But I really like, the grain, either the quinoa or brown rice. Millet would be great on the side just to eat with the filling. But it was really a winner. So I hope you guys make it. Please send comments to my website at ieatgreen.com. And I'd love to hear how all of you like it. So I look forward to hearing back from you. And now I'd like to introduce my guest today, Joe Malora. He is the territory manager for the Brooklyn Brewery. Brooklyn Brewery is one of the oldest craft beer companies in Long Island. I'm sorry, in New York. They opened in 1997. Or actually, Joe's been with the Brooklyn Brewery since 1997. We'll find out from him when it actually opened in a little bit. And the brewery at that time was also a distributor called Craft Brewers Guild. And they represented many different world-class beers. But then at some point in the early 2000s, they sold the distributorship so they could focus solely on the brewery. And Joe is Brooklyn Brewery's territory manager for our area. And he distributes through two different wholesalers in this area. One is Boning Brothers, and they cover all of Long Island. The second is Oak Beverage, which covers all of New York City from 96th Street up through Putnam County and Rockland County. And he lives here on Long Island, and he's a hiker and is actually a ADK46er, which means he's climbed all the peaks in the Adirondacks, all 46 peaks in the Adirondacks. So, Joe, are you with me?
Yes, good morning.
Good morning. Welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Happy holidays to you and your listeners.
Thank you. Yes, I can't believe it's that time of year again. It just flies by, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, I think with Thanksgiving being a little later this year, the Christmas season is upon us before you even realize it.
I know. And with, you know, the events I do, cooking for the homeless, I feel like I'm just sending out thank you letters to my volunteers from Thanksgiving, along with the sign-up for the Christmas one. It's just crazy. You know, there's no time in between.
Yeah, judging by the numbers that you said you had attend, it sounds like you have a lot of work coming up.
I do. So I just want to hear a little bit of the history of the Brooklyn Brewery. When did they start, and how big have they grown?
Sure. The brewery actually was founded in 1987. Steve Hindy and Tom Potter were the co-founders. Tom was a lending officer from Chemical Bank, and Steve was a journalist. At the time, Steve was working as a assistant foreign correspondent editor for Newsday, but before that, he had just come back from a six-year stint with the Associated Press in the Middle East. As you can imagine, in Islamic countries, home alcoholic beverages are illegal. So this is kind of where Steve first started brewing his own beer and becoming interested in making beer. When he returned back, when he came back and he was working for Newsday, they wanted to...
Wait, just back up for a minute. So you're saying he was brewing his own beer in the Middle East?
Well, I don't know he was making it with the diplomats there because you couldn't get a drink over there.
Wow.
So they were making their own beer. You know, he has a lot of crazy stories. He actually, he was in the grandstand sitting behind Anwar Sadat when he was assassinated.
Oh, God.
He has stories of being kidnapped, and he had a really tough 6 years over there. So he was there with his wife and his family, and in 1984, I think his wife said, "This is enough, it's time to come home." And that's how he started working for Newsday.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Brooklyn was always really rich in brewing tradition, and Steve wanted to bring that back to Brooklyn. Right around 1900, we had 48 breweries in Brooklyn, and as late as 1962, 10% of the beer being consumed in America was brewed in Brooklyn. In 1976, the last two breweries that were there, Schaefer and Rheingold, closed their doors. So Steve and Tom got the idea where they wanted to bring beer back to Brooklyn. Of course, this was easier said than done. The borough wasn't the thriving area that it is now in the late 80s. So instead of opening the brewery, what they did was they contracted the beer out of a brewery called FX Matt in Utica. They couldn't raise enough money to actually build a brewery in Brooklyn to start. And our first brewmaster was a gentleman named Bill Moeller. And Bill was a fourth-generation German-American. And his grandfather had brewed beer in Brooklyn, and he willed him his recipes. So we weren't brewing the beer in Brooklyn to start, but the recipe and the history of the beer was coming from Brooklyn, from Bill's grandfather's recipes. So we started brewing beer upstate, and in the early days it was tough because, you know, back then there wasn't really a lot of full-flavored beer. People were drinking mass-market beer. There wasn't too much variety, and the big distributors didn't really know how to sell our beer. They were bringing it to customers, and customers were saying, "Well, what is this? We never heard of it. You don't see it on TV. Why is it so expensive?" So it was definitely a tough go in the beginning. So what we did was...
It was always called Brooklyn Brewery, though, right?
It was always called Brooklyn Brewery, yep. And what we decided to do was open our own distributor and sell the beer ourselves. We figured no one could talk about the beer better than us, and no one could tell the story and the history of brewing in Brooklyn better than us. So we opened our own distributor, and that kind of helped get the ball rolling. We had other brands approach us who said, you know, we're kind of in the same boat as you. Can you help us out? So before you know it, we're selling 30 or 40 world-class beers all around the New York State area. But it was around in the late 2000s where we decided, well, I should go back a little bit. It was in 1994. Garrett Oliver, who was our current brewmaster, joined the brewery, and he helped us design the first brew house that we built in Brooklyn, which opened in 1996. So in 1996, almost 10 years later, we finally had our brew house in Brooklyn. In 2002, 2003, we decided to sell the distributor and then just kind of focus solely on building the brewery. And in my opinion, that was, you know, that was the best move we ever made. The brewery in Brooklyn now, we probably have a capacity to do up to 100,000 barrels there. We just finished a huge multi-year expansion over the last 2-3 years, and it's a really exciting time for us and the industry in general.
Do you have fear that, you know, one of the big beer companies like an Anheuser-Busch or something is going to try to buy you out?
I mean, we've been approached multiple times. I wouldn't say by Anheuser-Busch, but other large breweries have approached us, and you know, it's not something we're interested in doing. We're looking to stay independent and do our thing and build our brand slowly the right way, like we've been doing for the last 25 years.
Yeah, because your beer is definitely great, and you know, you just hear of all the I don't know which beers. Market themselves kind of as craft beers, but then you go and you find out they're really owned by, you know, one of the big beer companies.
Yes, very true. You know, I think the bigger brewers realize, you know, that the consumer right now is looking for a more full-flavored beer, and they want choice, and this is their way of trying to get into the market, you know, kind of posing as a craft brewery when, you know, the beer is maybe still made by Miller Coors or Anheuser-Busch. And a lot of consumers don't know, but people are starting to realize it, and it has its pros and its cons because, you know, in my opinion, someone who's drinking a Blue Moon or a beer like that, I think eventually they are going to, you know, realize that there's more than Blue Moon, and they're going to step up to a better beer and try something like a Brooklyn Lager or try one of the local Long Island beers.
Who makes Blue Moon?
Miller Coors makes Blue Moon, is the brewer of Blue Moon.
Miller Coors, right, and people don't know that. They think they're drinking a craft beer.
Yeah, a beer from Belgium, maybe. But, you know, it's all, you know, I almost consider a training wheel beer. Somebody tastes that, and it may open their eyes, and, you know, they step up to something different then.
Right. Now, does Brooklyn Brewery do anything to, you know, to try to help educate the consumer on the craft beer?
Sure, absolutely. I mean, we always have tours of the brewery, and we're always doing something local as far as beer dinner goes, beer dinners or tastings. The first time I met you, we were doing an event with Edible Long Island.
First event.
Yeah, exactly, at Market Bistro in Jericho. And, you know, you just want people to taste the beer and tell them a little bit about it and tell them your history and how you got started. And sometimes when I tell people, you know, Steve's story and how he got into home brewing in the Middle East, it's, you know, it opens people's eyes, and they can put a story behind the beer.
Right. That's always helpful.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, does Brooklyn Brewery do anything about trying to buy local hops? You know, I've just heard stories of, you know, there's all these craft beers, but they don't know where to get the hops. There's not this enough hops being grown to...
Yeah, with the, definitely that's an issue. With the explosion of craft breweries, you know, the market wasn't ready for the demand. Well, I should say the farmers weren't ready for the demand. And now it seems to be improving a little bit. But we do try to source local ingredients when we can. We just brewed a beer this year called Brooklyn Green Market Wheat. And that's brewed from 70% New York State-grown wheat and barley. And
what's it called? Brooklyn Green Market?
Green Market Wheat.
Weed?
Wheat.
Wheat, okay.
Wheat. Brooklyn Green Market Wheat. And right now it's only sold in New York City. We're just kind of making it in limited batches. It's made with orange peel. We source a little local honey from some upstate farms. And so we do try. We do try to source local ingredients when we can.
So when you can't get it for most of your beer, where does all that hops come from?
It comes from all over the world. Some of it comes from the Pacific Northwest. Some of it could come from New Zealand. Some of it can come from England. So there's so many different hops and different varieties that impart different flavors on the beer. So we're always experimenting with different hops and malts.
Oh, really? So all hops are not the same?
No, definitely not. Some hops may give you a grapefruit flavor. Some hops may give you more of a pine flavor. Some hops may give you tangerine flavor. So in every beer we brew, you know, there's different hops involved.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's almost like cooking with different spices.
Of course, right. Do they have any relationships directly with farmers where they're asking farmers to grow the hops for them?
We do. There's one beer that we brew called Sirachi Ace. Sirachi Ace is made with a hop called the Sirachi hop that originated in Japan. This was a hop that really wasn't kind of used too much, and Garrett rediscovered it a few years ago. Now, they're not growing the hop directly for us, but, you know, we were a big purchaser of it for a while. Now the hop's starting to become a little more popular. But usually it's the farmers that are coming up with the different strains. I guess there is some input from the breweries saying we're looking for this flavor, we're looking for that flavor. But in the end, you know, they're growing the hops for us.
Mm-hmm. No, I was just thinking, you know, if it would be helpful for any of the local breweries to actually have relationships almost like a CSA where they mm-hmm. directly, you know, commission the farmers and help them get started with the seed to grow for them. You know,
to help
they have
get them going.
Right, and then they have this relationship. The farmers get the money when they need it at the beginning, and, you know, and it's kind of a shared risk. But
sure, we do purchase hop contracts, you know, a few years out. So, it's you know, the farmers know that they have someone to purchase the hops from them, so they're not, you know, into as much as the risk.
Oh, good. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. That's
absolutely
great.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Joe, we're going to take a couple-minute break, and when we come back, I want to see how, you know, Brooklyn Brewery is actually using social media to also promote their beers and talk about some of the upcoming events you have going on, okay?
Sounds good.
Don't go anywhere, everyone. We'll be right back. You've been listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. Be right back. Hello, everyone, and welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And my guest today is Joe Malora from the Brooklyn Brewery. And we're talking about the rise of craft beers, the explosion of craft beers, I should say, everywhere, not just in Brooklyn, but right now we're focusing on the Brooklyn Brewery. Joe, are you with me?
Yes, I am.
So I would say now Brooklyn Brewery started, and they were really the first and only craft beer happening in Brooklyn. Now how many beer breweries are there in Brooklyn? Do you know?
We do have a handful of breweries right now, but just in New York State alone, I think I was telling you earlier, and you know how there were 48 breweries in Brooklyn, and then in 1976, the last two breweries that closed. But just breweries in general, in the late 1800s, we had over 4,000 breweries in the U.S. You fast forward to 1983, we were down to 80 breweries, from 4,000 to 80, which is, I mean, a drastic decline. And at that time, those breweries were all kind of making the same bland beer for the most part.
Right.
And today we have over 2,500 breweries in the U.S.
How many in New York State?
The exact number in New York State, I'm not 100% sure, but I could tell you on Long Island alone, we have about 14, 15 breweries, and there's a few more in development right now. So just in our own backyard, you know, you see it happening. Up until early 2000, we had Southampton Public House and Blue Point Brewery, and that was about it.
Uh-huh.
So right now, just even on Long Island, you could see the explosion.
Right. You know, I think it's a lot like, you know, farming. I mean, we used to have, you know, thousands of small family farms across the country, and they all fed their local area. And then, you know, they went to the monoculture and monocropping, and big ag took over, and, you know, we lost so many of our farms, and they became these big things. And I think the same happened with the beer. I mean, it's not that people stopped drinking beer. Just with the small breweries closed or were bought out by the big ones, and then they brought them all to their main houses.
Yeah, and, you know, after a while, it was inevitable that people, they want change. They don't want the same thing. And, you know, to me, it's kind of the beer culture has kind of changed as the food culture has changed as well. I mean, I can remember being younger and, you know, your vegetables coming in a frozen brick and your coffee coming in a can.
Right.
You know, as the food culture has changed, the beer culture has changed with it, coffee has changed with it. I mean, just look in your local supermarket now, and just the cheese offerings are unbelievable. Cheese used
right.
to be something that, you know, came wrapped in plastic and could survive in your pocket for 2 weeks.
Uh-huh.
So, and, you know, I think as it changes, as the food culture has changed and the beer culture has changed, the nice thing is that beer is kind of finding its way back to the dinner table as well.
Absolutely. I know my husband's a beer connoisseur. I mean, you know, it's definitely his joy to sample different beers and to try different ones, and he loves that. Do you make special beers for the season? I know, you know, with local comes seasonality. Like, are there special beers right now for the winter season? Will there be other ones for the spring season?
Yeah, actually, we have quite a few out now. We brew a winter ale for the winter season. It's a Scottish-style ale. It's malty. It goes great with winter foods, you know, stews and steaks and lambs. Pairs really nice with it, and that's usually available through February. We do another beer called Black Chocolate Stout, which is one of the beers that we're kind of known for. It's an imperial stout. It's about 10% in alcohol, so a little bit strong. And that's usually available through February as well. We have a real, real specialty beer that's really limited that's out now called Black Ops. And that is a stout that we brew.
Black Hops, are you saying?
Black Ops.
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 O-P-S?
Uh-huh. The story behind the beer is Garrett brewed this beer kind of without telling anyone and, you know, revealed it at a holiday party once. So we always call, you know, hence the name Black Ops.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And this beer we brew it, Garrett brews it in the brewing team. They age it in bourbon barrels for 4 months. And when we bottle it, it goes through a secondary fermentation in the bottle, which happens by adding champagne yeast.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, the beer is unbelievable. It's got that champagne-like effervescence and the bourbon flavor from the barrels, and that's really limited. We sell about 100 cases on Long Island. So if you could find the bottle of that for the holidays, grab it while you can.
Are they the larger bottles, or are they six-packs?
They come in larger bottles, 750 milliliters.
Uh-huh.
And you could find it at your local beer distributor. You could find it in Whole Foods. But like I said, extremely limited, kind of here today, gone tomorrow.
Uh-huh. I'm going to look for it for my husband for sure.
Yeah, I'm sure he would enjoy that.
Uh-huh.
And then we have another beer called Fire and Ice. Every 2 or 3 months, the brewing team comes up with a new beer that we brew only on draft and also on limited supply. Fire and Ice is a smoked oatmeal porter. Dark, malty, but has that smokiness to it. And we're going to be doing a little party at BBQ on January 14th in Patchogue. And that's going to be in conjunction with Edible Long Island as well. So you'll be able to come down and taste the beer, and there'll be some local food purveyors sampling their product as well. And kind of like we did at Market Bistro that time, you know, we'll have
uh-huh.
a little fun
when
with it.
When is that?
That's on January 14th.
And if people want to find out more information about it, do they go to the BBQ website or to Long Island Edible or your website?
They can go to our website or they can go to Edible Long Island website.
What's your website?
Brooklynbrewery.com.
Uh-huh.
And ediblelongisland.com.
I think they're .org.
.org, I apologize.
Right, uh-huh. Right, and just go to events and you'll find out more information about it.
Yep.
Good. Does the Brooklyn Brewery do any gluten-free beer, or?
We don't do any gluten-free beer, but you do see a lot of people brewing gluten-free beer now.
Yeah, I have been seeing that, yeah.
And also ciders are gluten-free, which I think is a help to the rise of popularity of ciders again, that they're gluten-free.
Oh, fermented ciders?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Gluten-free as well. There are a few out there. We haven't brewed one yet. Maybe that's something in the future. It does seem that there is a demand for them now more than ever.
What's the difference between a gluten-free beer? What's left out? The barley, I know, would have to be left out.
Yes,
is there anything else in beer that has gluten besides the barley?
Well, I believe it's just the malt that would have to be left out.
And, of course, if it's a wheat beer.
Yes.
Any wheat.
Yes.
Uh-huh. But you're not doing any of those yet.
We're not doing any of those yet right now.
Now, with the rise of breweries in Brooklyn and Long Island area, is there, you know, I know with a lot of the local movement and a lot of the local farmers, there's a lot of collaboration. Like, you know, when you go to the farmer's market, you don't feel the heavy competition that you might feel in some other areas. Would you say that the beer community is more collaborative, or is it more competitive?
You know, I think there's a level of competitiveness in any business, but for the most part, you know, we try to work together. You know, we'll share hops with each other if a brewery is looking for some hops, and, you know, brewmasters talk all the time and talk about different recipes, and I know if I'm in an account and I see someone from another brewery, we always, you know, chat and have a beer and talk about the industry in general.
Uh-huh.
So, we're kind of in it together, working against the big guys.
Right.
So, you know, it's a combination. But for the most part, I think the craft beer community works together. And, you know, we try to help each other out when we can.
That's nice, yeah, because I feel that with, you know, the local movement. I feel like there is a sense of camaraderie because we're all caring about good
same
quality.
Thing, yeah.
And we're all anti, you know, the big conglomerates and, you know, the people that are ruining the market. And,
you know, it's amazing. And it's, you know, we talked about the rise of craft beer and how much is being sold and how much is out there. But if you really break it down, in 2012, craft beer was only about 6.5% of the total volume of beer sold in the United States. So we've kind of only scratched the surface on, you know, on what we can do with this, which
mm-hmm.
which is exciting to me to see that there's so much more room to grow.
But it's probably the largest growth too is in the craft beer market. Even though it's still a smaller percentage, it's probably growing quicker. Just like I know the organic food market is the fastest segment of the food growth as well, even though it's still, you know, a small percentage of all the food out there.
Yeah,
but that's,
you know,
why the big conglomerates want to get a piece of it, because they know it's the future.
Yeah, you know, in 2012, I think total beer sales was up about 1%, but if you broke out the craft beer, we were up about 15%. So you could see why some of these bigger breweries want to get into the craft game. And
right.
It's funny how you mentioned the organic thing. You know, even in my local Stop and Shop, you walk in there and it's, you know, it used to be a shelf dedicated to organic, and now they're giving more and more space to organic fruit, organic vegetables. It's great. I think it's a great thing.
Mm-hmm. And what about Brooklyn Brewery? Do they make any organic beer, and are they thinking about it?
We are always looking for ingredients. We did make a beer once called Sustainable Porter, which we used organic malt for. You know, like I said, Garrett's always on the lookout for different ingredients, and if the opportunity arises to use organic malt or hops, we definitely take advantage of that.
Mm-hmm. Is there any preservatives that are put into beer that, you know, that someone who's interested in health would not like?
No, I mean, craft beer, for the most part, is malt, hops, water, and yeast. You know, of course, this, you know, in pumpkin beers, you're using pumpkin and some spices, but there's no preservatives in the beer at all.
There's not?
No.
Uh-huh. They don't have to put sulfites in or anything like that, like
no,
they do in wines?
No, absolutely
uh-huh.
not.
Uh-huh.
Malt, cool. Hops, water, and yeast. It's when you think about it, it's pretty straightforward.
And how far out does Brooklyn Brewery sell their beer? Is it really like limited to New York State, or are you around the country, or are you outside of the country?
Yeah, right now we're in about 26, 27 states, mostly up and down the East Coast. We do go as far west as Texas, but we're in the, right about now we're getting ready probably to start the new year to open in Nevada, so that'll be our first venture to the West Coast. And we actually ship beer to about 21 different countries, so we are becoming fairly international. And we're in the process of building a brewery right now in Sweden with our partner from Carlsberg. We're going to have our own brewery in Sweden. And we
really? That's exciting.
Yeah, it's really exciting. Really exciting. I'm looking forward
to it. In Stockholm or outside of it?
Right in Stockholm.
Uh-huh.
And I'm actually looking forward to some company trips there.
I would bet. I have a lot of good friends actually in Stockholm. I will tell them that. When is it starting?
It should be open sometime next year.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, we won't be brewing Brooklyn beers there. We'll be brewing beers with, you know, Swedish flair to it for the market there. And, yeah,
would the difference be when you say Swedish flair? What's the Swedish flair beer
You know, more styles that probably are conducive to, you know, rather than just brewing Brooklyn lager there, we want to come up with new recipes that, you know, that the Swedish people are going to want to drink. I don't know exactly what they have on plans for. I haven't tried any of the beers yet.
Uh-huh.
But I'm sure they have a couple of tricks up their sleeve.
Will it be called Brooklyn Brewery or will it be called Stockholm Brewery?
It'll be called New Carnegie Brewery. New Carnegie Brewery.
How'd they get that name?
Our partner, Carlsberg in Sweden, has a part of the company is called New Carnegie. So that's how we came up with the name New Carnegie Brewing.
Uh-huh. Well, and how does social media get played out in the Brooklyn Brewery? Do you use that as a marketing tool or?
Yeah, I mean, social media is huge for us. I just saw our Twitter followers. We're up to over 60,000 followers on Twitter. And whenever we have events going on or new releases, you know, we definitely use social media to get the word out there, whether it be Twitter or Instagram or Facebook. And, I think in all industries that's become a big thing now.
Right.
Now, I'm pretty sure you guys use it as well, too, correct?
We do, not as much. I know that, you know, it's good to use it, but I, you know, I'm still from the other generation that wasn't brought up with it. So it's harder for me to figure out why.
Yeah.
You know, but I'm doing it because I'm told I should. So, you know, I know that PRN has a large following. In their Twitter account, and, you know, they use social media. I certainly use, you know, Facebook and, you know, but Twitter I'm still, you know, I'm learning with. But I do. I have someone that sends out tweets for me. As this show will go out that way.
Great.
Is there anything else you'd like to share about the Brooklyn Brewery, any upcoming events or, you know, I know you've mentioned what beers we should be looking for right now.
Yeah, you know, the barbecue event would be the most recent thing coming up on Long Island. Actually, as we finish our expansion at the brewery, we have a bunch of new beers coming. And, you know, one of them being called Brooklyn Blast, which is something that we made only in draft, and now we're offering it in bottles, which is a big hoppy IPA. So that's just starting to hit the market on Long Island. We got a lot of great new beers coming out next year. We're going to make a lower ABV beer called Half Ale. It's only going to be about 3%, 3.5% alcohol by volume, and that should be releasing sometime in the first quarter next year, which we're excited about.
Now, is the brewery open for people to just come and take tours, or do you have to make reservations? How does that work?
Sure, absolutely. We Monday through Thursday, we're by reservation only. And if you come to one of the tours on Monday through Thursday, we call them small batch tours. So you get to, you know, it's limited to 25, 30 people. So you get to spend a little more time in the brewery and is a little more one-on-one time. Friday, we are open to the public, 6 to 11. That's just for happy hour. So you could just come and, you know, hang out with some friends and have a couple of beers. Saturday, we're open noon to 8 p.m. And Sunday, we're open noon to 6 p.m. And Saturday and Sunday, you can also come in, have a couple of beers, and actually get a tour of the brewery as well.
So Friday night, you don't get a tour of the brewery?
Friday night, there's no tours. It's just the number of people. It's just too much. And then Monday through Thursday is by reservation only.
Uh-huh. And where is the brewery located?
It's in Williamsburg, 79 North 11th Street.
Uh-huh.
And you could find directions on the website, but if you're driving in, it's pretty much LIE to the BQE, and we're 5 minutes from there.
Now, do you also have a space in there that people can, you know, rent the space and have an event?
We don't do too much renting of space, but there is, you could contact someone through our website if you have some kind of community event or charity event that you want to do, and usually we can work out something.
Mm-hmm. Good, yeah, I was thinking of, you know, the slow food movement, which I'm involved with, you know, the Slow Food Long Island, which is with Huntington.
We've done events with slow food before, so that's definitely something we could look into.
Yeah, because we're always looking for places to do events, and I think Brooklyn Brewery would be certainly right up our alley.
Yeah, I thought you were talking about more than someone just calling and saying, hey, can I rent the brewery and hang out for a few hours, but we definitely do events with slow food and community events. So, yeah, absolutely. If you're interested in doing something like that, we could certainly talk.
Great. Okay, well, Joe, thank you so much for joining us. This
thank
has been
you.
Wonderful,
been
very informative. And, you know, I know that I'm a big fan of Brooklyn Brewery. My husband really is. And so it's been great to have you on and tell us more about what you're doing and the explosion of craft beer. I mean, it's just great, you know. I'm always shocked when I go to a party these days and someone, like, has Budweiser. I'm like, are you kidding? You know, it's like,
you know, these days if I bring a six-pack of Brooklyn to a party and there happens to be Bud in the cooler, it's you see what people like because you see what beer has gone first.
Oh, yeah.
Which is usually the good beer.
I know. It's always amazing to me. But everyone has their choice. That's why it's such a beautiful world, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Anyway, Joe, thank you so much. Everyone out there, this is my last time with you before the Christmas holiday, so I wish you all the happiest and joyous holiday. And like I said, if you want to add some of your lovely energy to our cooking, you can go onto my website and sign up. Have a great holiday. God bless you all, and I'll be with you again the day after Christmas. Have a great one. Bye-bye.